Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, to the fastest growing segment of society, to those who have come to realize, and there's many of you around the world, that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions, no matter what country they represent, no matter what religion they may represent, that they are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, that they cannot be fixed. They don't deserve your loyalty, your affinity, your pledge, your vote. Our mission, therefore, is to know who is working against our interest, to understand how and why they are doing so, because exposing and condemning such schemes isn't hateful, it's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to turn back to the prophet Yeshayah, Isaiah, and we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the teaching that Yahweh provides along with his prophetic witness, because ultimately, his covenant provides the only reliable answer for you and your family. Our phone number, if you'd like to discuss anything that is brought up in this program over the next 3 hours, it's toll free, 877-376-45. On Sunday, misguided men on either side of borders that other misguided men have drawn celebrated a pagan holiday, Easter. And yet the Orthodox Easter messages from the patriarchs in Kiev and Moscow only serve to highlight the deep division that is across the Ukraine, Crimea, and New Russia. There is a tense sense of animosity. The head of Ukraine's Orthodox Church, and all of these churches, by the way, are ultimately derivatives of the Greek Orthodox Church, which is essentially the initial version of Roman Catholicism. And if you recognize that Constantine, while he created his capital in Constantinople, and that he chose to reign ultimately from the western portion of his empire, that the emergence of really Greek Orthodox Christianity was inseparable from Roman Orthodox Christianity. Same man is responsible for both. That would be Constantine. And this then emerges throughout the eastern realm of Rome, which would then include what we are witnessing in the areas around the Balkans and into the Black and Caspian Seas. Therefore, Ukraine is a ultimate transition from the Roman-influenced Greek Orthodox version of Christianity to a number of variations today. For example, that in the Ukraine, as well as that in Russia, which is now called the Russian Orthodox Church. And typically, the only difference in the orthodoxies between the probably 20 or more variations of Orthodox Christianity is that they differ on who's in charge. Their religion is almost identical. They are very set in having a church hierarchy, something that God despised. They are all claimed to be directly authorized and inspired by God, which is untrue. They all show an overwhelmingly inappropriate reverence for saints, something that God said was an abomination. They all pay homage to Mary, even though that is holy and completely inappropriate. And so it's basically the same religion, all derived from the same source with the same flaws, with the only difference really being the location of their influence and who's in charge. very similar to other religions when they break into sects like this. So the head of the Ukraine's Orthodox Church, Patriarch Filaret, accused Russia of aggression and evil. Now, there actually is no indication that Russia has been aggressive or evil, but truth has never been a strong suit of Orthodox Christianity. The Russian Church Patriarch, and this would be the Russian Orthodox Church, Kirill, asked God to end the designs of those who wanted to rip Russia and the Ukraine apart. Well, the reality is, from the Russian Orthodox perspective, Russia is, Ukraine is part of Russia, as is particularly New Russia, which would be what we refer to today as the Eastern Ukraine. It was always referred to as New Russia, or Little Russia, and Crimea has never been considered part of the Ukraine. So, his perspective is, my dominion as a Orthodox cleric is Russia, and therefore I want everything under Russia. The Ukraine's patriarch says, you know, my dominion is over the Ukraine. I want everything under the control of Ukrainians because those things increase their power. Pro-Russian activists in the East continue to occupy government offices all the while. It is interesting, when we studied, middle of last week, the Geneva conclusion that was promoted by Secretary Kerry, when he said it was a good day's work, and you hear all this rhetoric of a one-sided determination, and of the Americans, particularly Barack Obama and Kerry, talking down to the Russians and saying, you know, now it's the Russians' decision as to whether or not they're going to stop being aggressive in the Ukraine. That it was impossible that that was the actual outcome of that meeting. That nations don't go into discussions and come out with an agreement to label one side black and the other side white, the other side, one side good, the other side bad, and have a verdict, a conclusion, a path that is wholly one-sided. And that's what the United States claimed, that the Russian-speaking individuals, the pro-Russian individuals in New Russia, in Little Russia, in Eastern Ukraine, would simply turn over their weapons. They would leave the buildings, but that the thugs in the Ukraine, in Kiev, who had occupied buildings and who now claim to be a government, they could remain. And it was nonsense. It was impossible that that was how it was being perceived on both sides, and I said so. And immediately thereafter, what you say, which we hear, is that the pro-Russian activists in Little Russia and in New Russia are saying, yeah, well, we don't have no problem with the agreement as they perceived it, which is that those in Kiev are occupying government buildings and have done so through force, just as they are doing in the East. And so they're saying, yeah, if the government of in Kiev, the so-called government, they leave those buildings and recognize we don't have a government currently in Russia, we'll do the same. If they put down their arms, which now they control the Ukraine's military, such as it is, then we'll put down our arms, which is that the pro-Russian protesters have commandeered the assets of what used to be the Ukrainian police. That's why they're in unmarked uniforms. That was their uniform. And the reason that they're unified in opposition to Kiev is that the government of Kiev is trying to hunt them down and blame them for the deaths that were mostly perpetrated by the protesters in Kiev. So that's the situation that exists here. No one seems to be willing to acknowledge it or to deal with it in a way that is reasonable for the various parties. And there's no attempt to recognize the despicable history, even present, as it relates to the Ukraine, particularly the Western Ukraine. It's the most anti-Semitic place on earth. It is the most lecherous as it relates to entering into business deals with other parties, not only reneging in them, but being outright thieves. There is no country that has a more sordid and problematic history as it relates to borrowing money and changing all of the terms and conditions and not paying it back. We have a serious problem with the Ukrainians, and yet American politicians are saying we stand with those in Kiev, not recognizing, not caring that they're anti-Semites, not caring that they're economic deadbeats, not caring that they can't be trusted, not caring that they came to power without popular vote through thuggery, while condemning what is happening in the East as if it were not a mirror of what has just occurred in the West. As we continue to survey this story from the perspective of the media, particularly related to these Easter celebrations, it is said that the Russian media is reporting several deaths in a gun battle near the eastern town of Slovyansk. The Russian foreign ministry blamed the Ukrainian ultra-national right-wing sector for the attack. Russia, this is a quote, is indignant about this provocation by gunmen, which testifies to the lack of will on the part of Kiev authorities to rein in and disarm nationalists and extremists. End quote. That's the perspective of the Russians. The Russians view the authorities, not government, in Kiev as provocateurs, that they're the one that are taking this country to the point of civil war. And it is true. And they view that the citizens in the East are Russians, and they are, and that they have an obligation to protect their citizens, which they do. We'll return to Shattering Myths and these conflicting Easter messages after the break. Returning to the religious message pronounced during Easter by the dueling Orthodox clerics. In his Easter message, Patriarch Fillette said, "Against our peace-loving nation, which voluntarily gave up nuclear weapons, there has been aggression, there has been injustice." Oh, spare me. They didn't give up their nuclear weapons. They weren't their nuclear weapons. They were Russia's nuclear weapons. So if they're going to say that they gave up their nuclear weapons, then we have to realize that they're Russia. Moreover, their weapons weren't just given over as a peace-loving nation. They've never been a peace-loving nation. This is the most vicious nation on earth relative to their pogroms, their vicious attacks against Jews, where more Jews have been savaged there than any place else, in terms of looking at historical events. Moreover, they were bribed into giving up those nuclear weapons. They negotiated deals from Russia, concessions from Russia, particularly on the natural gas, to surrender the weapons. And there has been no aggression and no injustice perpetrated against the Ukraine, unless you look at the mob in Kiev that took over the government buildings. The people voted 97% in Crimea to leave the mess of the Ukraine, the failed experiment, and join Russia. In the East, they're trying to accomplish the same, and they want the same kind of referendum. That's all they want to do. That's not an injustice and there has been no aggression. But again, when it comes to religious patriarchs, truth is in rare supply. It's the first thing sacrificed. This is a quote to them. A country which guaranteed the integrity and inviolability of our territory has committed aggression. God cannot be on the side of evil, so the enemy of the Ukrainian people is condemned to defeat, he said. Well, that would be an illusion. Russia didn't guarantee the integrity and inviolability of the Ukraine. The Ukraine simply said, we don't want to be part of Russia during the breakup of the USSR. And it has been an experiment that has failed miserably. It has failed economically. It has failed politically. It has failed in terms of political revolutions, two of which have already occurred in 20 years. It has failed economically. They've gone from being prosperous to bankrupt. And there is no proof whatsoever of Russian aggression. There is proof, however, of Ukrainian aggression. God has no interest in what's taking place in the Ukraine. He despises those who despise his chosen. And so if there were a country on earth that God would say, I want nothing to do with you, I will have no involvement whatsoever with you, the Ukraine would be the prime example. Moreover, God has no involvement with Christians, Orthodox or otherwise. Nor has God ever condemned a nation to defeat that wasn't directly assaulting his country, Israel. And so if you are engaged in an assault on Israel, that God needs to intervene on behalf of the Israelites to honor his ongoing promises, then he will intervene and you'll be condemned to defeat. But if you're not assailing Israel, if your actions are in support of Israel, no matter what you may do, no matter how evil you may be, God will have nothing to do with you. He is not going to work against them. This presentation of God's involvement is the kind of stuff that gets Christians so tangled up in their underwear. They've got no clue as to what God does and doesn't do. It's like the Jerry Falwell statement pointing his finger and says that God is judging America. He's already exposed and condemned America. He's not in the process of actively participating in the nation's demise. And he's not going to participate in the demise of Russia. He's not going to participate in the demise of Ukraine. They're doing a fine job on their own of destroying their pretense of a country. We'll be back with Shatteringness and the horrible news that continues to emanate for this part of the world. The tie into the Easter message, of course, in the Ukraine was, Lord, help us resurrect Ukraine. Well, that assumes that, of course, that resurrection actually occurred, and it didn't. That would assume that God's name or title is Lord, and it isn't. And that would assume that the Ukraine was once alive, and it never has been. There has never been a viable country known as the Ukraine. So, once again, everything that was said is wrong. It's also to infer that the Ukraine is now dead. So, it is astonishing how stupid religious leaders are. In Moscow, Patriarch Kirill appealed for peace, saying, it should reign in the hearts and minds of our brothers and sisters by blood and by faith. Well, yes, there are many who are related, particularly in the South and the East. They share a common ethnicity. And by faith, there really is very little difference in the perverse Christianity that is practiced by the Ukrainians in the West and the Russians. But he also said the Ukraine was spiritually and historically at one with Russia. Well, that would be true. It's statement of fact. And he prayed for it to have authorities that were legitimately elected. And that might be a good thing. And so far, you know, they in the dueling patriarchs, you've got one that is wholly delusional and completely dishonest, and one that is telling the truth. It would be better to have a legitimately elected leadership in the Ukraine. That's just not the case. Then he says, we're a single people before God. And this idea that they were a people before God is only true if you recognize that they are a people against God. And before and against are similar. The Ukraine's acting president, Oleksandr Turkinov, said in his Easter message, love it that politicians are deciding to be religious and overtly religious. Happened to Cameron and over the weekend as he spoke of his Britain being a Christian nation and all of the wondrous achievements of Christianity. And when you look at the sordid history of the United Kingdom, I don't see such evidence of goodness. But then again, I associate evil with Christianity, as does God, so perhaps it is a Christian nation. Anyway, speaking as if his religion and his politics were swallowed up in one, as is the case around the world, the president, we should say the acting president of the Ukraine, said, we are living in a fateful time when the Ukrainian people have decisively affirmed their striving for freedom and justice. Well, that would not be true. First of all, there really isn't such a thing as a Ukrainian people. And they haven't strove for freedom. They strove to occupy government buildings. They were not looking for freedom. They were free of Russia. And they wanted to be free of their own government. Well, that's an extraordinarily odd interpretation of freedom. And mob rule isn't justice. They circumvented their constitution to appoint this illegitimate government. Once again, the acting president, like the cleric in the Ukraine, is creating an illusion. It's the same illusion that America is supporting, by the way. And you don't ever find a favorable resolution to any conflict when one side, in this case, the side of the Kiev acting pretense of a government, is painting nothing but illusions. In an interview to be aired in full later on NBC's Meet the Press, the Ukrainian's interim prime minister, Yatsenyuk, accused Russian President Vladimir Putin of trying to restore the Soviet Union. You know, this kind of rhetoric is extraordinarily dangerous. There is no evidence that Vladimir Putin is even involved in the machinations that are taking place across Western Ukraine and Little Russia, much less Crimea. He didn't instigate what occurred in Crimea. He merely accepted their decision. He isn't instigating or orchestrating what's taking place in Little Russia, simply saying that he will protect the lives of Russians that live there. There is no reason for him to restore the Soviet Union. He's not even a communist. If anything, he would be considered a fascist. In fact, I would say that he is actually an oligarch in the democratic tradition of Sparta. If you were to define his politics and economics most closely, he would be an oligarch in the history of Sparta, which was the longest-serving democracy in the world. He most certainly isn't a communist. When we personalize things, as opposed to talking about the big issues, we're scapegoating. It's kind of like what militaries do when they want to convince those that they have given weapons of mass destruction to go off and wield at a presumed enemy. They try to make the foe that they want their troops to kill a representative of a single individual who they then demonize. Like, all of the German troops were the living embodiment of Adolf Hitler. Like, all of the Muslims who wish to express their religion as it was lived by Muhammad are the living embodiment of Osama bin Laden. And so when we do this sort of thing, we create a errant perspective, and we turn to ad hominem arguments as opposed to reasoned discussion. It is extraordinarily inappropriate. It is inaccurate. And it is the kind of stuff that leads to war. Mr. Putin succeeded. Mr. Yatsenyuk, if Mr. Putin succeeded, Mr. Yakunets said it would be the biggest disaster of this century. You know, this is framing the issue the way that America wants it framed. They want this big, bad Putin bear to be going back to the Cold War issue era and of trying to build a Russian empire. And there's no evidence of it. His interest in New Russia, in Little Russia, in Crimea, is the same kind of interest that an American president would have if Texas decided to secede from the Union and that there was a civil war brewing within the state that was now independent. It's exactly the same. There is another story out of Kiev, and we continue to focus on Kiev because the way it is being handled and presented in the United States puts us at the precipice of world war. And so it's important for us to communicate the best we can the truth about this region and about the belligerents in it, so that to whatever degree we can influence people's understanding, we will preclude an unnecessary war that would cost the United States its very existence. Yes, if the United States were to do as it's maneuvering to try to stop Russia militarily because of its perceptions of what is occurring, it would be the end of the United States. And it's not because the Russian military is superior to the Americans. Not. It's because if America were to deploy its military against a foe the size of Russia, it would destroy the country. The country could not survive that today. We are way too close to bankrupt to engage in a military encounter of that scope. So here's the story about the military being orchestrated by Kiev. It reads, the Ukraine's new government, and by the way, they don't have a new government, the Ukraine's acting government, inherited an army so bereft of modern equipment and training that when Russian troops entered Crimea and agitators stormed government offices in eastern Ukraine, the country proved helpless to protect its borders and citizens. Actually, Russian troops didn't enter Crimea. They were in Crimea. And they come and go from Crimea all the time. It's one of the largest Russian military bases, both naval and Air Force. And so it isn't a reasonable assessment of what's going on, although it's true that this fledgling military in the Ukraine was helpless. But it wasn't trying to protect its borders or its citizens. It was simply trying to put down a protest that they themselves had engaged in. And what happened that caused them to be helpless isn't their lack of equipment, which is also inferred, in fact, directly stated by this article. The reason they were ineffective was twofold. One is the citizens of these communities in Little Russia, in the east, met the approaching military convoys in the roads before they got to town. And they formed human roadblocks and said, "You're not coming here. This place, we don't know you. You don't belong here. Go away." And that was the prominent reason, the primary reason that they failed. It wasn't because their armored personnel carriers and their helicopters and their airplanes weren't capable. It's because the citizens of these communities resisted them. And second, the bases in the eastern cities were occupied by a substantial percentage of Russians who said, "You're not only aren't you going to use these weapons against the people of the 12 cities of the eastern area, but we're going to deploy them." And so the government of the Ukraine, if you want to call it that, didn't have access to their own implements of war because they were taken by the Russians. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Now that we know the real reason that the Ukraine's acting government failed with their imposition of their military against Little Russia, that it had nothing to do with the fact that it's outdated, but the fact that it was out of sync with the citizens. Let's continue with this article. It says the corruption that had darkened all of the nation's institutions and had provoked demonstrations to stand their ground in Kiev until the leaders fled. So it is acknowledging that corruption darkened every one of the Ukraine's institutions. Now, it's saying that the military corruption was also part of provoking the demonstrators to stand their ground in Kiev. So if those demonstrators in Kiev were in opposition to the police, which they were, and they were in opposition to the military, which this infers they were, because they perceived the police and military being corrupt, then is it any wonder that the military and police are in opposition to them now? And that those, as either Biden or Kerry would say, that those wearing masks aren't Russians in the sense of the Russian Federation, but they're Russians ethnically, and they're and have been and are members of the Ukrainian military and the Ukrainian police, the enemies of the government that is acting in Kiev. You see a trend that's emerging here, folks? This then says, but the depth of the damage took the country by surprise when the Crimea Peninsula was easily lost to Russian annexation last month. They can't even, I mean, America's media is complicit here in the lie. They can't even say that it wasn't lost because of the inability of the Kiev attempts to use their military. There was no attempt by Kiev to deploy its military in Kiev. None. And there was no battles in Kiev that were lost because of inferior military capabilities. And this says that it revealed a military profoundly weakened by theft and neglect. Well, I'm going to tell you that theft is a big part of it, as is corruption. It permeates every fiber of what is known about the Ukraine. Every place you look relative to the Ukraine, the government of the Ukraine, the people in the Ukraine, have acted like thieves. They've acted like savages. Our army, this is a quote, has been systematically destroyed and disarmed, Deputy Defense Minister Petro Meshed said at a briefing this past week, and its best personnel dismissed. Well, its best personnel are probably now working against you because you're against them. And if it has been systematically destroyed, whose fault was that? Was that not the Ukrainians' fault? Were they not in charge of their military? In the east, militants have occupied buildings in more than a dozen cities. and that they showed on Saturday no signs of giving up their positions. Militants. So when the protesters were acting like militants in Kiev, they were called freedom fighters. They were called peaceful protesters. They were called the voice of the people, the will of the people. But when the ethnic Russians occupied buildings in the same fashion, but without firing shots, without Molotov cocktails, in the East, they're called militants. We have to be really careful when we apply labels, that we don't reveal our hypocrisy. The army was sent in and looked more anemic than ever when small knots of civilians managed to block armored personnel carriers simply by standing in front of them. And yet, the journalist who wrote this article can't make the connection. They failed. Because the citizens who stood before them represented the communities, represented the people who lived in those communities, in those 12 cities. And they didn't want the invasion of the Ukrainian military. They wanted to be free of the Ukrainian military. It was one of the most heroic acts witnessed in the last decade. And yet, the journalists, politicians alike, NATO see it as sinister, when it should be viewed as enormously heroic. It should be viewed as something of individuals taking a stand against military aggression to preserve their right to be free. Individuals standing in front of armored personnel carriers, and yet they're the ones that are being condemned. What's wrong with us?